Oh my God. How have you people survived without me? Welcome to the Sharp Tongue podcast that was on a hiatus for a couple weeks. I don't know what the fuck I was thinking. I'm back. I just got back to LA after being gone for 3 weeks on my fucking world tour that had stops in Syracuse, New York. No world tour is complete without some stops in Syracuse, New York, which is really the epicenter of the world. It's a crossroads, if you will, of gluttony, shotgun weddings, debauchery, alcoholism, drug abuse, and good Christian values. I apologize for having been on a hiatus. That is not my goal with this podcast. I want to keep it consistent for you fuckers because I know you guys look forward to it. And I look forward to it too. But as a creative person, sometimes you get into these dark places, I like to call them, where the only thing that really feels good is red wine and Barbadian weed. I keep wanting to say Barbadian, but it's Bayesian. I also was in Barbados on my world tour. But yeah, so I just was in a creative slump and I just didn't want to, you know, I probably should have just done a podcast and just talked through it. That makes more sense. But at the desire to not risk sounding like a fucking, you know, depressive asshole, I just decided to take a little bit of time off and come back. So I did that. So you know what? C'est la vie. Right? C'est la vie. Is that how you say it? Cesspool la vie. I am excited to be back and talking to you guys. It's something I need in my life. So fuck you. Okay. I hope you need me as well. I fucking hope that you need me. I don't give a shit if you need me or not. I sound like some real desperate shit. That's like stage 5 clinger shit. I hope that you need me. Really? Do you, Carl? Get the fuck out of my house, you weirdo. Where did I go? So I've been gone. I was in New York City. I played Gotham Comedy Club in New York. That was my first stop a while back. I mean, Jesus, God, I've been gone for, when the fuck did I leave? I left November 18th and I just got back. It feels like 2 years have gone by. I feel like Tom Hanks when he gets back from the movie Castaway. Anybody see that movie where, you know, he's lost on the island, he's deserted on an island and he gets back and they've got that buffet of seafood for the poor fucking bastard. He's like, oh, I've been surviving on seafood for 3 years. Can I get a goddamn hamburger? That's how I feel right now. I was in New York City at Gotham Comedy Club the 19th through the 22nd. Thank you for everybody who came out. Thank you to Gotham Comedy Club for having me. Chris Mazzilli, the Mazzilli brothers are amazing. They are, they've been a long time supporters of Jesse May Peluso, and Chris Mazzilli is a close friend of mine and a mentor. So thank you guys for having me. Thank you for the fuckers who came out to see me. Then I went to Syracuse, New York and performed at the Funny Bone, my hometown, my home club. Thank you to all you fuckers who came out to see me, and to my cousin Diamond David, who took 2 t-shirts off of my goddamn merch table, you son of a bitch with sticky fingers. I got a cousin David who calls himself Diamond David, and he took some of my merch because, you know, your family feels like they're entitled to your shit. Give me my t-shirts back, David, you fucking son of a bitch. Diamond David, more like cubic zirconia David. Okay, you can't call yourself Diamond David and then take t-shirts, you fucking cheap fuck. You know, you go home and the reality of where you came from sets in and 2 things happen. Severe depression because of the truth of the matter, where your roots are, and then sheer joy to realize you got out of a destiny that could have been much more dire. I was fortunate to leave Syracuse when I was 18 and to escape any sort of, you know, single motherhood that probably would have been my impending trajectory in my life had I not gotten the hell out of that town. Funny Bone was amazing. My father got up on stage. Joey Peluso. My dad, he loves to tell jokes. I definitely get my ballsy fearlessness and need to entertain people from my father. I definitely acquired that characteristic from him. And then I got the dry, sarcastic, witty, sardonic sense of humor from my mother. She's quiet and classy, but she'll throw these verbal daggers at you that get you right into your soul. And you're like, oh God, how can something so sharp come from someone so small and dainty? So yeah, my father performed. I had him close out the shows that he came to. And, you know, some people might think like, oh, you're having your dad close out for you. But, you know, it's such a delight. Like, seeing people's faces when they watch my dad on stage is hilarious, because it's like they get an insider look into where I came from. And it's also really cute to have somebody's dad tell jokes, because they can kind of get away with more. And his jokes are so filthy. He's got a couple clean ones, but Jesus, he's got some ones where I'm like, damn it, Joe, where the hell did that come from? You evil son of a bitch. What are you, a Hitler's court jester? My God. But it was so fun to have him up on stage. And I watched him, and I can't help but do this because my father's older. So whenever I'm with him, I'm trying to like manufacture memories, because one of my biggest fears is the day that he dies. I don't know why I have such a macabre sensibility about me, the fact that I think about that. But when I see him, I'm like forcefully trying to remember the moment, and I try and make memories so that I have them. And so just watching him perform, it makes me so happy. It makes me so happy because of how happy he is up there doing it. Like, not many people, you know, being a stand-up comedian is kind of a commodity. You know, there aren't many people that are doing it the way I am, at least. And to be able to share that with my dad, who is somebody who enjoys performing, but he does it at the Change of Pace, which is his local watering hole in Syracuse, New York. That's the biggest stage he has. Now, given the regulars that go there love him, but still, it feels great to be able to share the limelight with my father, who just is like a kid in a candy shop. He's like a whore in a vibrator store. He's just like a priest at a playground. You guys get where I'm going with this, right? You understand what I'm saying? He's like a dick in a butt. Too far. Took it too far. Literally. Don't go so far in there. He had a great time. And I had Gomez Adams, who is a local radio personality in Syracuse, New York, and also a stand-up comedian. I had him perform, so it was really nice to have him there and my father there, because he's known my father for a long time. I used to, in Syracuse, New York, when I was like 16 years old, I used to go to these comedian, I got some goddamn fucking, Jesus Christ, I had steel-cut oats, and they're in every corner of my teeth right now. I feel like I just ate dirt. Oh my God, I just choked on a steel cut. Oh, that thing went right down my throat. I didn't cook them long enough, and so they're all chunky, and I'm trying to talk, and I'm getting oats stuck in my goddamn throat. There's one chilling on my uvula right now. Growing up, my father, one of his best friends, was a comedian. I probably have talked about Mike Goss before. When I was like 6 or 7 years old, my father and Mike Goss were our softball coaches. I was friends with Mike's daughter, Kim Goss, and my sister and I, we were all on a softball team, and Mike and my father coached. And this is like a peewee league. Like, the ages range from like 6 years old to 12 or 13. So it wasn't like a serious, you know, cutthroat competitive organization. It just was something in the neighborhood that everyone did. You know, we had games every week in the summer. It just was like a community thing more than it was like an actual athletic program. But my father and Mike were our coaches. And I just remember being a kid and loving Mike. Like, he was the first comedian I ever met or was ever exposed to. And I just remember feeling an allure to him, not like attractive allure, but like, who is this guy? I love what he does. I love how he is. He's entertaining. He's funny. I just remember being attracted to that as a kid and wanting to know more about that. And so Mike was totally influential in my life. But it was funny because my father is a ferociously competitive man. My dad is just competitive over everything. Trivial Pursuit, you can't even play a board game. Life, Monopoly, you try and play any of these games, Connect Four, Joe Peluso will swear and throw things across the room if he doesn't win a game of fucking Connect Four. Slapjack, watch out. He's going to break your goddamn fingers. And so we'd be playing these games. And again, there are six-year-olds on some of these teams. I remember one game. I hit a ball and the referee made some call that my father did not agree with. Did not agree with, to the point that he thought, he didn't even think. He ran out to the field screaming at the referee, "You son of a bitch, you fucking asshole, oh, you cock sucking, Jesus Christ, what kind of fucking call is that?" And the kids are starting to cry. The six-year-olds that are on the league are starting to cry. Women, mothers are coming to protect their children because my father, Joe Peluso, loses his Sicilian temper on the referee at the peewee game at 6 p.m. on a Sunday in the middle of the summer in Syracuse, New York. Sweating from his upper lip, his face was blood red. "You fucking referee!" My dad got ejected from the game. No one ever got ejected from the game. No one ever did after that. My dad got kicked out of our peewee game for verbally assaulting the referee and scaring the children of Syracuse, New York. That's just the way my father was. Mike used to call me the Hoover, too. I always loved that. He was very encouraging because he said balls wouldn't get by me. I was like a vacuum. I'd suck them up. That, or he just knew I'd be good at sucking a dick one day. I don't know. I'm going to go with the former. So, yeah, Mike was this amazing guy in my dad's life. One of my dad's best friends. And Mike was, you know, on top of working with my father, he was a touring comedian. He'd go on the weekends and do gigs, and my father would go with him. And once in a while, Mike would perform in Syracuse at this place called the Spaghetti Warehouse, which is a restaurant that when I was a kid, everyone thought was delicious. And now I realize it was the most disgusting Italian food ever, but we went because it was all we had. Mike used to do dinner and a show. When I was a kid, I used to go watch it, and I was just, like, so enthralled. Like, what the fuck is this? What is this life? And so Mike was definitely one of the first exposures to comedy that I had as a kid. And, you know, when I got older, Mike used to do these comedian breakfasts on Saturday with all the local comedians in Syracuse, New York. There's a bunch of them. Moody McCarthy is one of the comedians that came out of Syracuse, New York, that was very close friends with Mike Goss. And there's just Nick Mara and Gomez Adams, Tom Anzalone, like all these guys that were just working comedians in Syracuse would get together and they would have breakfast on Saturday and talk about their gigs and talk, you know, bust each other's balls. And my dad used to go as well, and he'd bring me. And I would just sit around this table of men at a diner in Syracuse, New York, when I was like 16, watching them bust each other's balls, and I didn't want to be anywhere else. I was like, this is amazing. This camaraderie that exists between these crazy ass people is where I want to be. And Mike Goss was one of those people. And he's passed away. He had a lot of health issues because he was pretty obese for a majority of his life, overweight by like 300 pounds. So that puts, you know, that wears on your body after a while, especially residually once you get older, the effects, you know, we know that now. Carrying that weight is just tragic to your organs. And so he passed away, which was terrible, but he got to see me perform, and I was able to call him a couple times when I was on the road and frustrated, and he would always, you know, give me advice. I remember one conversation we had. He told me, he's like, when you're on stage, you're a tornado, and don't ever forget that. You've got to leave damage when you leave that stage, and that always stuck with me, like to give it my all, to really perform and to leave houses ruined and families torn apart. to kill everyone's animals and to destroy their family homes. That's basically what my goal is when I'm on stage. But no, I was just thinking about him in Syracuse when Gomez came and did a set, and then my dad did on the same night, and I just wish that Mike was there, you know, that he could see that we were doing our thing and thinking about him. So the Syracuse shows were pretty dope. I had a great time. And then I was home for Thanksgiving. You know, I was home chilling there. You know, there is a such thing as being home for too long. But I love my house. Like, my mom still has the house that I grew up in. So that's nice. You know, I actually stay in my old bedroom, which is weird. It's different now. The John Stamos posters have been taken down. I'm really upset that I didn't keep the poster that I had and I talked about on Girl Code. I did have a poster of John Stamos over my bed that I kissed so much I wore a hole into his lips. Like, literally, you could see his lips were gone and you could see my bedroom wall through the poster. It was from like 17 magazine or something. But my walls were filled with posters. I wish I would have kept that. I would frame that poster today if I had it. And with the lips, with the hole in the lips, I would frame that and still put it above my bed and still make out with it. Oh my God, the John Stamos photo. Did everybody see that? The John Stamos photo with his ass? Excuse me, is he trying to make love to me through magazine pictures? Is he trying to tell me something? He's obviously in love with me that he put that photo up. Jesus, did they? I can't even talk. Is that a real ass? I gotta look at this. Paper Mag. It was for papermag.com. If you are a John Stamos fan, you must go and see. He exposes his whole ass. Now, I want to know if they photoshopped it, because it kind of looks like my ass. I feel like it's such a perfect ass. I'm not saying I have a perfect ass. I mean, I work very hard for the ass that I have. There's nothing wrong with having ass confidence. But his butt is so plump. He's like 52. He stopped traffic. I made it my Twitter header picture. So if you follow me on Twitter and you see a big, plump, black and white ass, it's John Stamos's. Get in the know. Get in the know. You got to know what's up, okay? Don't judge me. I'm going to make it a paperweight. I'm gonna make that wallpaper. I want to make that my bathroom wallpaper. And just have people come over my house and pin the tail on John Stamos's butthole. I bet his butthole smells like just tzatziki. I don't even know. It probably smells delicious. I wouldn't want my butthole to smell like food. Not that I wouldn't want somebody to eat my butthole, but like, it better smell like berries or cookies. No, maybe not cookies. That'd be weird. I think floral is a good way to have your butthole smell. I don't know about tzatziki, because then it's like I'm hungry and I want, you know, some falafel, and it just gets weird. That photo just, I can't even handle what is happening. I don't know. It's like, why did he, I don't understand. The pose in front of the window, it's like, that's how I want to wake up every morning, to just John Stamos in a little light ballerina pose with his ass in my face in a beautifully lit bedroom. What more do I need in life, really? Jesus Christ. I can't even handle it. Yeah, so I was home in my... Oh, I'm going to sneeze. This is embarrassing. My sneeze is so horrific. Oh my God. Yeah, it was crazy to be home for so long, you know, but I get along well with my family. I know a lot of people don't, but I do. I love my family. I love my sisters. My dad is like my homeboy. My mom and I, we just, you know, go to Marshall's and drink wine. It's just a good time. Of course, there are your issues you have and all that stuff and family history and all that blah, 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 but we have a good time. Thanksgiving was fun. It was just me, my mom, her boyfriend, Bob. Oh God, Bob, God bless Bob. My dad came over, my sister Emily, who's pregnant, and her now husband, Steve. We were all there. And, you know, so my mom made an amazing dinner. you know, just all the stuff. Your turkey and your potatoes and your green beans and just all the deliciousness, right? And so we all eat. And then like 5 minutes after we eat, my mom and Bob are hustling to wash dishes. They're like, like it's their job. And if they don't do it, they're going to get beaten by somebody. They're just scrambling, putting dishes, washing dishes. It's like, I just ate half a turkey. You want me to get up and wash dishes right now? What, is there a second seating? Is there another family coming in we have to fucking set the table up for again? I just was like, why are we rushing to wash dishes? Can I digest? I got tryptophan pumping through my goddamn aorta. And this lady's got the dial out already. She's got the Palmolive. Bob was yelling at us. They can get off their gabbing asses and come help us wash dishes. How many people do you think can fit around the sink, Bob? Okay, there's 6 of us. You think that sink is big enough for all of us to wash dishes? What is this, the Amazing Race for dishware? Son of a bitch. I just thought it was funny that he wanted to rush and wash dishes. Oh my God, I can't handle it. So I was able to actually chill at my house for a few days after I worked at the Funny Bone. I probably should mention now that this weekend I'm going to be at the Irvine Improv, 11th, 12th, and 13th, Irvine Improv in Irvine, California. Next weekend, I will be at Helium Buffalo in Buffalo, New York, the 17th, 18th, and 19th. That's Helium in Buffalo, New York. Buffalo Wings, what's up? And then for New Year's Eve, you can catch me at Zany's Chicago in Chicago, Rosemont, and St. Charles, the 29th through the 31st. In Irvine, I will have Marcella with me this weekend. And next weekend in Buffalo, I'm going to have Marty Caproni with me. And then in Zany's for New Year's Eve, I will have Marcella back with me. So come check me out. My website is up and running. It's been redone. Thank you, Aaron, for doing that. It took fucking forever, but we got it done. Check out jessiemay.com for your tickets, you bastards, and come see me live. I'm a hoot. I'm a good time. I'm a good time girl. Yeah, so I was able to chill in Syracuse for a few days after my gigs at the Funny Bone. And then my sister had her wedding in Barbados. I went to Barbados. I flew there with my sister Chris, my mom, and my pop. And my sister Emily, who got married to Steve, was there. They were waiting for us. It was the first time I was on a plane with my mom and dad since I was like 5. I've never taken a trip with my parents. It's been, God, over 15 years since we all went on a trip together. The last trip I remember, besides us going to camp during the summer for a couple weeks, the only trip we ever went on was to Disney World when I was like 5 years old. And I've never been on a plane with either one of my parents. So it was a lot of fun. I got to tell you, I got on that plane and I was like, come on, Nance, we are drinking wine. Actually, we got Bloody Marys. And my sister Chris sat with my dad and I could just see him a few rows back, you know, because we were on the JetBlue flight and it was a new plane. These new planes are amazing. They've got bigger screens in front of you so you can feel like a real American, a real lazy son of a bitch and watch TV instead of doing work. I could see my father just punching the screen. Like he just has no couth about him when it comes to technology. He just looked like he was aggressively fingering the screen, trying to get it to change. And I just felt for my sister, Chris, like she had to deal with that. we had a couple hour layover at JFK. This is the thing about Syracuse, because we flew out of fucking Syracuse. It's a very convenient airport. They've got like 2 terminals. And, you know, it's the smallest airport I've ever been to. Very convenient because you're in and out. There aren't a lot of people. But the downfall is you have to connect everywhere. So we had a 3-hour connection at the JFK Airport, Terminal 5, motherfuckers. Fly JetBlue. Terminal 5 at JFK is the bomb. There's so much to do. You can chill. They got delicious buffets. There's little shops. It's one of my favorite connecting places. So I recommend it. You know I travel a lot if I'm recommending specific terminals. Oh, my God. So, yeah, we got to Barbados. on the last Friday. Yeah, we flew in on the 3rd, and it was a cloudy day, but you know, we chilled, we had a good time. We were at the Hilton in Barbados. It was lovely. You know, it was a fun time, and I was doing that whole manufacturing memory thing with my dad, because my dad is so fun, and my mom as well. Just having them on the same trip and my sister getting married, I was on cloud nine. I was like, this is amazing. These people drive me nuts, but this is amazing. I had like 37 pina coladas every day. I don't know what it is. Every time I go to like someplace tropical, I'm like, I feel like having pina coladas. Bring it on, bitch. It was beautiful. And one of the most amazing things happened. I hung out with a monkey. An actual monkey. So many amazing things happened. One, on Saturday, it was beautiful. So we went out to the beach. My father can't swim. My father, he says he sinks. He goes, I can't swim because I sink right to the floor. Okay, Joe, you're not a fucking weight. You're not like a free weight. But he has no real ability to swim. So I was trying to manufacture a memory with my mom and my dad. Chris was, I think, up at the pool area, and Emily and Steve were gone. So it was just me, my mom, and my dad. And I was like, I'm going to take this opportunity to create a memory. And I just wanted to like be in the ocean with my parents, because I'd never done that. And I wanted them to experience it. My mom is very frail, too. You know, she's a very thin woman, very petite. She also has lupus. So that is an added factor that can make it difficult for her to be outside. And, you know, she has pains and stuff. So it's difficult for her sometimes. And my dad is, you know, 70,000 years old. So I just wanted to have a memory with them. So I was like, let's go in the ocean. My mom was like, okay. So I hold her hand. I go out. And I was going to bring my phone. I went to go back to get my phone. I was like, you know, I don't want to get it wet. It's fine. We'll go out into the ocean. So we go out, like my mom and I are shin deep, and I'm trying to coerce my father to get into the ocean. He's like, I'm not coming in. I can't swim. I'm like, Joseph Samuel Peluso, get your fucking ass in the ocean right now. So he finally succumbed, and he was like, all right, fine, I'll come. So he starts to walk into the water, and I just lightly splash him. Just a little splash, you know, just because I'm a scorch. He calls me a scorch. Whenever I start to like tease him, he calls, oh, you're such a scorch, because I'm always like jabbing him and poking him and driving him nuts. So I just splashed him just a little bit. Now, at this point, my mother had already gone a little bit deeper. She was like knee deep into the ocean. I was a little bit, you know, close to being knee deep. I'm taller than her. So, you know, her knee deep and my knee deep are two fucking different things. So I was also like out a little bit deeper than my father. And so I splash him. And then I turned to walk with my mom. And then I turn back and I see my father. The splash had thrown my father off his fucking axis. You would have thought, looking at him struggling to get his center of balance after I splashed him, you would have thought that the earth had shook off its axis. And that a giant man in the sky, like, let's just say God for argument's sake, that God had earth in his hands, and he was shaking it like one of those magic eight balls. Because my father, from the splash, it just threw him off. He was backstepping. He was trying to get his bearings. The waves were coming in. That was really disorienting him. The waves really threw Joe right off. And so my mom and I were just holding hands, looking at him. We're like, Dad. And then a bigger wave comes in. Mind you, he's in shin deep of water. Shin deep. 6 inches at most. A wave comes in and knocks this man on his ass. He fell down and everyone was laughing, because every time he fell and kind of rolled a little bit deeper. And my father's paranoid of water, especially the ocean. Oh, the shit, it'll get sharks. There's shit that's going to get you. So he's paranoid, and he rolled a little deeper. My mom was keeled over in laughter. Keeled over. She was laughing so hard it sounded like she was crying. It sounded like a woman mourning the death of her son. Like those deep, carnal, animalistic sounds that come from your core. That's the laughter that was coming out of my mom's little ass body. I never even heard the sounds coming out of her that I heard that day. And so my dad rolled a little bit deeper into the ocean. And he's so uncoordinated. Every time he tried to get up, a wave would hit him and just knock him over. And I couldn't, and I almost peed myself. I had to cross my legs. I was bent down. My mother was bent over. We're like 3 feet from him. And I'm like, Mom, we got to help him. And she couldn't stand up because she was laughing so hard. And I look around and everyone's laughing because my dad is just, he's in 10 inches of water. And the waves kept knocking him over. He must have gone through. My mom said, she goes, Jesus, your dad got hit by like 8 waves. And my dad said, he goes, I was trying to figure out where the fuck I was. I couldn't figure out where I was. Where did you think you were, Dad? You just got off a plane. You're in Barbados. Would you think you were in the Bermuda Triangle, lost in like a whirlpool in the middle of the ocean? That's what his face conveyed. At one point, I looked at his face and it just, he had sheer terror. Sheer terror on his face, and we had to help him up. He couldn't get up, and then he got on all fours. He was crawling out of the ocean. He looked like the creature from the Blue Lagoon, the creature from the Black Lagoon. You remember that movie? That's what he looked like coming out of the ocean, except on all fours. Maybe that's a bad example because that animal was amphibious, and he kind of was pretty, you know, agile on land and by water. So my father was the antithesis of that creature. My dad looked like, you know, just how he was, a drunk man crawling on all fours out of 6 inches of water that he almost died in. Oh my God, it was amazing. And I was like, well, there's my memory. See, when you manufacture a memory, sometimes you get some grade A shit. And had I brought my phone, none of this would have happened. My sister came back. We tried to retell the story. My sister's like, why didn't you get videos of it? Why didn't you take a picture? And I was trying to tell her, if I had taken my phone, I wouldn't have splashed him because I would have been scared my phone would have gotten wet. So actually, by choosing not to capture the moment like everyone does now, we overshare and we overcapture everything. I decided to just have a organic moment with my parents, and boy, did it pay off. Son of a bitch, did I get lucky. It was amazing. We laughed. We're still laughing about it. When we landed in Syracuse on Monday night, we still were laughing about it. It's a sort of thing that someone starts laughing and you know why they're laughing, and then everyone chimes in because of the experience. It was amazing. It was the best. I couldn't have asked for anything better. I got to hang out with a monkey, which was amazing. Shortly after my dad almost drowned in the ocean, my sister saw a very attractive Bayesian man with a teeny monkey. He had a little green monkey, 4 months old. And so we all go over. We're avid animal lovers. My sister Chris was a vet tech for a while, and she also had dogs for a long time. So she's a huge animal lover. And we're like, let's go see the monkey. We go over, and this little 4-month-old, 2-pound green monkey was all over us like a child with attention deficit disorder. That's what this monkey was like. And he got him. Micah was the owner. Micah with the cheekbones from Barbados got him as a rescue. I guess a lot of people get these monkeys and they don't take care of them. And then there's a rescue in one of the rescue places in Barbados. So he adopted him. I thought that was so sweet. And I hung out with Charlie. My sister and I hung out with Micah and Charlie for a couple days, you know, because Micah would just be chilling on the beach with his monkey. And the monkey and I became really good friends. We hung out for a few days and he started to really take a liking to me. He humped my head. His weenie is so little. He's got the teeniest weenie I've ever seen. But when we met him, he jumped on all of our heads and was dry humping our face. So I may be pregnant. I may be pregnant. It was amazing. I all my life I've just wanted animals. I just want to be surrounded by animals, and to chill with this monkey was just it was for me. I took more photos of the monkey than I did at my sister's wedding. I've got 37,000 photos of me and Charlie, the green monkey, and I've got like 4 photos of my sister at the altar. You know, what do you want from me? Okay? She starts just crapping in her diapers and swinging from a tree. Maybe she can get some more photos on my phone. Until then, what are you going to do? All right? I took my parents to some fish market in Barbados, you know, because a lot of times we were on a resort and I like to get off the resort. You can't stay on these resorts every time you travel. If it's not safe, that's understandable. But for a place like Barbados, it's not that dangerous if you know where to go. There's this fish market that everyone told me about, Oystens Fish Market. We went there. Amazing, delicious. If you ever go to Barbados, you have to go to this fish market on like a Friday night. It's packed, but you get the freshest food. So we ate and then we walked around for some, we saw some shops and I saw this dude selling stone pipes, like little bowls, beautifully carved out of one piece of like marble. I think this is made out of marble. I bought the pipe and he goes, "You want something to put in that?" I don't know why I made him sound like a fucking leprechaun. Yeah, man. And now he's Jamaican. He's like, "Do you want to put something in that pipe? You want some ganj?" And I was like, "Fuck yeah, I do. Bajan, Captain Bajan. You know I do." He goes, "Come back in 10 minutes. And I was like, "All right." So I made everybody shop for 10 minutes. I left them. I ran back. I got weed from the guy. It looked like gunpowder. And I was like, "I'm going to die. It's going to be one of those Dateline episodes where they're like, Jessie Mae went to Barbados for her sister's wedding. She didn't leave. She got too high with a Bajan man. And was found floating in 6 inches of water. She got too high and died of six inches of water." Oh, the irony. The weed was amazing. It literally was just, I mean, I want to go back just for the weed. And I couldn't smoke at all. He gave me a good amount. And I seriously contemplated putting some of it in my butthole. I'm not going to lie. I seriously thought about it. I had a little, you know, thing I could use to stick it in my butt. And then I thought, I'm traveling with my parents, okay? The last thing I need is to get arrested at the border for, you know, 3 ounces of weed or whatever the hell it was. And now I regret not doing it because I got stopped anyways because of my podcast equipment that I traveled with that I ended up not even using. Like a fucking asshole. I should have used it, but I didn't. And I got stopped. They were like, "What's this?" And I'm like, "It's podcast equipment." They took apart my whole fucking bag. I should have just had the weed because they probably would have just looked at the podcast equipment and then the weed in my butt would have gone, you know, just would have chilled there until I got back in the States and I could have took it out of my butt and smoked it. But, you know, I didn't. And in hindsight, I regret it because I could have had a great story for you guys. So I got to work on my memory manufacturing for myself. Really, I just have to take risks. You have to risk it all for the story. You know what I'm saying? Do you feel what I'm putting out? I regret not putting the weed in my butthole is what I'm saying. So I gave it to the taxi cab driver. I was like, "Hey, you want to take this?" He's like, "Fuck yeah." I was like, "Okay, think of me when you get off of work." "Okay, Alexander." So I hope Alexander had a great time thinking about me with that weed. It was great, man. And then I got back from Barbados. I stayed in Syracuse for an extra day. I chilled there. It was amazing. I took my dad to get an iPhone. He's had a rotary phone for the past 20 years that he calls everybody on. He's had the oldest phone that it's like an LG slide phone. I don't even know what the brand, what the model number is. But I got him an iPhone and now he's in the 21st century. It's going to be interesting to see how long it takes for him to get used to the iPhone, but he made a phone call and he FaceTimed me. So I think we're okay. I just remembered something funny that happened in Barbados on the night after my sister's wedding. The night of my sister's wedding, my sister Chris and I were, we did a conga line. Okay, first of all, we did a conga line. There was like 10 people in the pool area sitting at the tables. They had like a singer, they had a couple singers and DJ. And so they had like musical entertainment. And my mom, off, you know, drunk off of wine, was like, we gotta do a conga line. Emily needs a conga line for her wedding. I was like, okay, Nance, calm down. We'll get the conga going. So we started a conga line with just my sister, who looked beautiful, I must say. Her dress was amazing with her baby bump. My sister, myself, my mom, my sister Chris, my dad, and Steve. Yep, just the six of us did a conga line around 10 foreigners. There were people from Sweden. There was a couple from Germany, a table from Great Britain, a couple regular Americans. Nobody wanted to get in the goddamn conga line. The one person who got in the conga line, an old black lady from like Brooklyn. That was my bitch. She was like, oh yeah, I'm gonna get in this conga line. So she got in the conga line and two kids. That's right. A set of twins. They were like 5 years old. That was our goddamn conga line. And I'm pretty sure we did it to hot, hot, hot. Hey, I mean, can you get any more white? I don't think you can. But my sister liked it. And after we did the conga line, Chris, my sister, said she saw a crab in the sand. She's like, it looks like it's dead. And, you know, her and I, we got to save animals. And I was like, what? We got to go save the crab. So we go find the crab, and he's just chilling in the sand. He's kind of, you know, he's not really moving much. And he's like in a walkway. She's like, I think he got stepped on because he's not really moving. And he's in this main path off the beach leading to the pool area. And I was like, well, let's pick him up. And she's like, you think we should put him in the ocean? I was like, yeah, let's put him in the ocean. He probably traveled all this way from the ocean, got stepped on. And he's like, fuck, what am I going to do now? I'm so far from home. I'm injured. I need someone to help me out. I don't have insurance. So I pick him up and we walk him to the, this is nighttime. We walk him to the shore and we just kind of put him, you know, in the sand and see what he does. He kind of walks towards the ocean a little bit. I was like, oh, okay. So he's feeling this. He's like, yeah. No, this is cool. This is cool. And then he stops. And I was like, maybe we should put him a little deeper so he can just have the water, you know, take him into the ocean. She's like, yeah, let's do that. And so we put him in a little deeper and then a wave comes in and just takes him in. And I was like, well, there we go. We just saved a crab. He's back in the ocean. He'll be fine. We'll be good. We felt all proud about it. We might even did a high five. I think we did a little high five. You know, we felt really proud about ourselves. And then the next day, Chris goes out in her balcony and she just kind of, you can see the shore from our balcony. She's like, what's that on the shore? She's like, I wonder if that's a crab. And I was like, maybe. And then we go down there and the crab had died. We killed the crab. It was a sand crab that we drowned. We committed crabicide. It was a sand crab. Yeah, we went into the crab's house, took him out of his house, and murdered him. It was being eaten by a seagull, and we felt terrible. And Micah, you know, who's a native to Barbados, we told him. He's like, oh, yeah, that's a sand crab. And I was like, oh, shit. We felt terrible. We felt so bad. We committed crabicide. Oh, my God. So, you know, I would like to donate money to the ASPCA in lieu of me murdering a crab. I didn't do it intentionally. I didn't even make, like, a crab cake from it. I'd even make a cute little necklace. I just was trying to save a friend's life, and I ended up murdering him. So let this be a lesson to you all. Google sand crab before you go throwing one in the ocean. Oh my God. I can't even deal with it. I haven't really watched a lot of movies. Usually I do like a cute little movie review. I saw Ricky in the Flash. When I got back from Barbados, I chilled at my mom's house and I rented Ricky in the Flash with Meryl Streep. She plays like a rocker, this lady who was a shitty mother and she left her kids for music. You know that story, that common story about the mother who leaves her child for rock and roll. It was entertaining. It was impressive because Meryl Streep sang and played guitar. Is there anything this woman can't do? I want to see her make a movie about a porn star. That's when I'm like, you know, that's when I'll be like, this is one down ass chick. She's talented. She's an amazing actress. Meryl Streep. She can do no wrong. I want to see her get down and dirty on all fours. I took my dad to see Krampus. That's in the theaters now with Toni Collette and Adam Scott. It's a spin on A Christmas Story. It's about a European folklore called Krampus. And I think it's an actual story that is told to scare children into submission and to make them behave in Europe. I think Krampus is an actual folklore that parents have used for years. And that's what the movie's about. And it was actually really entertaining. I have to say, my dad and I went to see it. We were one of six people in the theater. My father's like a toddler. He's like, oh, it's a big theater. I'm like, Dad, you can't talk. He's asking me questions about the actors when the movie's on. I'm like, what are you doing here? What are you, a Puerto Rican family from the Bronx at the AMC 25 on 42nd in Times Square right now? You got your kid with you too? Can you shut up? So it was fun. I recommend it for you horror fanatics out there. It's entertaining, a little campy, but pretty cool special effects. And they used actual animatronics, which I'm a fan of when they don't use CGI. They used actual prosthetics, and the makeup was pretty dope. The makeup special effects is pretty dope. I got to check and see who worked on that, because I'm a big fan of, like, you know, obviously Greg Nicotero, who does all The Walking Dead, but he's more famous for the movies back in the day, older movies, and Tom Savini, who is somebody who's worked with Quentin Tarantino on a lot of his films. He did From Dusk Till Dawn. But I got to see who did this Krampus. So go check out Krampus. It's pretty good. Again, I am at Irvine Improv this weekend, the 11th, 12th, and 13th. I'm at Helium Buffalo next weekend. Get your goddamn chicken wings. Fucking chicken wings. The 17th, 18th, and 19th. And then I'm in Chicago at Zany's for New Year's Eve, the 29th, 30th, and 31st. I would love for you motherfuckers to come out. Check out my website, jessiemay.com. Tell your friends about my podcast, please. Spread the love. I'm going to be doing another giveaway next week. I have one more necklace to give away. I want you guys to send your good energy to my neighbor in Syracuse, my mom's neighbor, Kim. Her husband, Joe, is very sick. He has stage 4 cancer. So I want you guys to send your positive energy vibes through the air, wherever you are in the country. Send them to Syracuse, New York. And I hope he can find some peace going through that horrible struggle. Anybody who has gone through that knows what it's like. It's a terrible, terrible thing. So I hope he can muscle through it. And I send him my positive vibes as well. I'd like to thank the man who gave me the weed in Barbados. I don't know his name, but I think about him fondly. I love my new pipe. A little announcement, kind of a big announcement, but in a small package, I got another dog. It's been hard without Fozzie Bear. Fozzie Bear passed away October 30th. And I read that people either wait a long time to get another dog or they get one right away. And I think because traveling is something I do frequently, I wanted, and I knew I was going to be going on this long, you know, 3 weeks of travel. I thought it would be a good time to get a new dog to incorporate him into my crazy travel schedule right away. And so I just started looking a few weeks ago on this app called Woof. Anybody looking for a dog, there's this app called Woof. And it's basically like Tinder for pets. That's the best way I can describe it. It's basically you swipe right or left on a dog that you think is hot. The actual mechanism is a little bit different, but there's profile pictures and there's descriptions and information. This app gathers all the rescues within a certain mile radius. You can set whatever mile radius you want, you know, up to 15 miles away, up to 30 miles away. And this app pulls from all the websites that have dog rescues or cat rescues, and it puts it into one app. It's actually really smart the way that it was created, and it's very user-friendly. The interface on it is really easy to use. And so I just looked at a bunch of dogs. You know, a couple people are like, I can't believe you got a dog already. But Fozzie Bear was sick for a year and a half, and he wasn't the normal dog that he was prior to him being sick. So I feel like I kind of lost him before he passed away, because, you know, he was having seizures and I had to medicate him heavily, and I couldn't bring him with me everywhere because he's, you know, the heart disease would increase and it would advance. So I got another dog, I think more recently, because I had lost Fozzie much sooner than when he died, in my mind. Even though I was able to have an extra, you know, few months because of medication and the amazing veterinary clinic that I had, the cardiologists were amazing at keeping him comfortable. I just was looking at pictures and I found this one photo. I'm like, damn, this dog is so cool looking. I got to go meet him. So I drove like an hour south, went to Mission Viejo, is an hour south LA. And I met this little dude. His name was Luigi, and he looked like a little fucking deer. He's like fawn colored, and he had like a black stripe, and he's very thin. He's like a Chihuahua mix. And I sat with him, and he was kind of skittish, but he had a little bit of personality. And he also had a brother named Mario. Get it? Mario and Luigi. They were found roaming the streets in Mission Viejo, probably from some puppy mill. That's also where if you buy a dog from a pet shop, 90% of them, 99% of them come from puppy mills. So you probably should resort to a certified breeder, somebody who's reputable, or rescuing. I'm a big advocate of adoption, pet adoption. So don't buy a dog in a pet shop. It's the worst place you can buy a dog. Actually, they're not as healthy as if you go with a breeder who's a reputable breeder, or my first choice is to adopt. Usually you can find a nice mixed dog, and mixed dogs tend to be healthier than purebreds. Purebreds usually are inbred to maintain a pure bloodline, especially at these puppy mills. They're just letting brothers and sisters have sex. And that happens in a lot of states in America between people, but we're talking about dogs here. So I went and I met him and his brother, because what the vet was trying to do, she was like, yeah, I know you're interested in Luigi, but here's Mario. This bitch was trying to get me to adopt both, and I actually considered it. I was like, I don't want to tear these two apart. They're so cute, but three dogs is an emotional problem. You know what I mean? Like, two dogs, I have Carlin here, but I know Carlin missed Fozzie, and I wanted him to have another friend as well. And so I just told the vet, I was like, yo, I really want to take Mario too. I can't. So I ended up taking Luigi, and I took him with me. I got him just a couple days before I went to New York. So he went to Gotham with me. He went to Syracuse with me. He stayed in Syracuse when I was in Barbados, and he's back here with me now. He's sleeping on my bed. And I have to say, he's the coolest dog. His name is not Luigi. I've changed his name to Chaplin after Charlie Chaplin, who's one of my favorites growing up as a kid. I loved silent physical comedy. I was a big fan of Mr. Bean. I loved Charlie Chaplin. You know, I loved any of the sort of that older physical comedy, Abbott and Costello. I loved all that shit. So I had the name. I wanted to name something Chaplin, and he just fit the bill perfectly. And he's a dope dog. Fozzie was a motherfucker. Fozzie would bite your ankle. He'd bite your finger. If you went near me, he'd go at your jugular. He was a protective dog. And Chaplin is so cool. He's so laid back and calm. He doesn't really bark. And the day I got him and Carlin were just chilling. I went into the bathroom to like do something, and I came out and they were snuggling. And Fozzie and Carlin lived together for almost 4 years. They never snuggled. Fozzie would bite the fuck out of Carlin's face. And Carlin was almost taken aback. He's like, yo, I don't trust this little scrawny motherfucker. Why is he so snuggly and adorable and soft? I feel like he's going to turn on me. So Carlin's still not sure, because he's so tormented from Fozzie biting his face. Every time Carlin would try and come in my vicinity, Fozzie would just run at him and be terrible. So now I think Carlin is trying to get used to the fact that we actually have a sweet dog. So I'm very excited. I feel like I chose the most perfect dog. He travels so well. Yo, this dog slept on my lap from LA to New York on the plane. Didn't move, didn't pee, didn't poop, didn't bark, didn't make a noise. Fozzie would be all over the fucking place. One time I flew from LA to New York. I fell asleep. It was a 3-seat row. There was nobody in the middle seat, and there was a guy at the aisle. I always sit window. I like a window seat. I like to feel like I'm in a car. And so I fell asleep with Fozzie on my lap. I woke up. Fozzie was on the guy's lap. The guy was reading a paper and petting Fozzie. And in my mind, I'm like, oh my God. And I said to him, I was like, I'm so sorry. Did he hurt you? I fell asleep. He goes, oh, no. We've been sitting like this for a couple hours. So Fozzie was weird like that. You never knew what you were going to get with him. So I just was relieved. I've been relieved to have this dog. I feel like he was meant for me. He loves Carlin. He's chilling right now. He's probably, you know, dreaming about being on the streets. He's got nightmares. You know, I think he dreams about being a homeless person on the streets, but now he's straight chilling. He went from the streets to Virgin America, main cabin select. Okay. You're welcome, Chihuahuas of America. I'm coming for you. So that's my semi big slash little announcement. I have a new furry friend, and he's about a year and 2 months. So he's young. He's about 6 pounds. He's about 4'9". He's very tall for a little dog, but I'm very excited about it. So Chaplin is my new son. I'm in a good place. I'm over my little creative rut. I'm sorry I left you guys. I abandoned you. And you know what? As somebody who adopts dogs that are abandoned, shame on me. Shame on me for doing that. I hope to see you guys. Come out to my remaining Jess America tour dates. Irvine Improv this weekend, Helium Buffalo next weekend, in Zany Chicago for New Year's Eve. You guys give me life. I've missed you. It's been amazing to talk to you. I hope you all had an amazing Thanksgiving. And Christmas is around the corner, motherfuckers. So buck up. And Hanukkah and Kwanzaa and whatever else you celebrate. If you don't celebrate anything, you're a heartless son of a bitch. I love you, though.
Hey! If any of you are looking for any last-minute gift ideas for me, I have one. I'd like Frank Shirley, my boss, right here tonight. I want him brought from his happy holiday slumber over there in Melody Lane with all the other rich people, and I want him brought right here with a big ribbon on his head. And I want to look him straight in the eye, and I want to tell him what a cheap, lying, no-good, rotten, four-flushing, low-life, snake-licking, dirt-eating, inbred, overstuffed, ignorant, blood... sucking, dog-kissing, brainless, dickless, hopeless, heartless, fat-ass, bug-eyed, stiff-legged, spotty-lipped, worm-headed sack of monkey shit he is! Hallelujah! Holy shit! Where's the Tylenol?